What's up? It's Delaney, and I'd love to invite you to become an honorary co-host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Do you want to pick episode topics and guests? Done. Want to surprise your loved ones with shout-outs on the show for a birthday, project launch, a much-needed divorce? Whatever you're up to, would love to be a part of the celebration. Get your favorite and least favorite quotes featured on the podcast, submit questions for our special guests, and find lots more new features and surprises at patreon.com/selfhelpless. You'll also get added to our Patreon Insider email list to easily redeem rewards via a quick email reply. Because we know hanging out on Patreon isn't everyone's thing. You can also opt out of emails if you prefer to be a silent supporter of the show. And don't worry, we do not Scrooge McDuck these contributions. 100% of proceeds go directly to operating expenses that make this weekly podcast possible and available to all. Learn more at patreon.com/selfhelpless or simply click the link in this episode's description. Thank you for helping me fill the void of being the last standing host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Thank you so much.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Self-Helpless podcast. I'm Delaney Fisher.
And I'm Kelsey Cook.
And today's guest, this is a fantastic one. We have self-aware narcissist and internet personality Lee Hammack on today. Lee is diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder and has been in therapy for 3 years managing his NPD. And his perspective and encouragement and insight has helped thousands of people, victims of narcissistic abuse and people with narcissistic personality disorder alike.
Yeah. Delaney, you did such an incredible job interviewing Dr. Romani. A few weeks ago, I was so bummed to not be able to be there for that episode, but I listened to it back and it was just, I mean, it's so mind-blowing. And we got so many messages from you listeners after that episode with Dr. Romani about narcissistic personality disorder and that you had so many more questions and things you wanted answered. So we reached out to Lee. He's at Mental Healness on TikTok. He has like over 300,000 followers on TikTok. He's just really blowing up there. And it's truly one of, I think, the most interesting episodes and interesting guests that we've had on.
Fascinating. And there is a little bit of a disclaimer here. I mean, Lee even talks about it himself, that some of these things might be triggering, but they also might be very validating. So just use your best judgment if you're in recovery from a narcissistic relationship. I found it incredibly informative and helpful. Also, Lee makes some references about Delaney with an IE versus Delaney with an EY. That's because his wife's name is Delaney, which was really funny to find out.
Yeah, definitely. So here is our interview with Lee Hammack.
Oh my gosh, I am so excited. Today we are joined by Lee Hammack, AKA Mental Healness on TikTok. Lee, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Yes.
So excited. I was telling Lee, I got TikTok just to watch his videos. I'm not a TikTok person. And I mean, I'm hooked.
Lee, you have to know, I know you just met Delaney, but that is the highest of compliments. Because this woman has made it her life's work to just go off the grid and live in a commune Central America. Like, she really wants nothing to do with social media anymore. And the fact that you like resurrected her from the social media graveyard, she's up and watching your videos. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yesterday was Easter, so the has risen.
You Jesus, Delaney.
He has risen.
So our listeners know we did an episode with Dr. Ramani, who is a narcissistic personality disorder specialist and a clinical psychologist. And we had so many other questions from our listeners. And then I ended up going on my Instagram stories and letting my followers there know that we were going to be having you on. And I just opened it up to them, like, what questions do you want us to ask you? And we got a ton of them. And I don't know if you – do you ever do, like, Q&A on TikTok or, like, go live on TikTok?
I go live on – like, so I go live on Instagram a little bit more than I do on TikTok. I used to go live on TikTok more. But, like, as my following has grown on there, it kind of gets, like, you know, it went from, like, me, like, being on there with, like, 20 people just – going back and forth, getting really intimate with people till it being like 300 and like, and you know, I can't read it as fast. People get mad. Like, did you read my question? I was like, I didn't see it. But did you see your question? No, I didn't see it. You know?
Yeah. I can't imagine. Sometimes I'll watch YouTube live videos and they come in so fast on people that it's like, I don't know how anybody can catch a single question.
People are smart with it. People are getting smarter with it though, because the questions I did notice, people are like put emojis like at the beginning and end of it, so you notice that, like,
that would be catchy.
I'm like, what was that? Right? So I scroll back to find out, like, what was that? You know, it was like 5 words.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's a good way, you know?
Works. Yeah. It works. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and just dive into some of the questions that my followers on Instagram had for you and answer whatever you're comfortable with. You've been, okay. I think what you do is incredible. You've popped up on my For You page on TikTok, and then I just looked at all your stuff, and the self, I feel like self-aware narcissist is almost an understatement for what you do, because I love, there's a video where you're like, look, I feel special that I'm the only self-aware narcissist, like you're, where you can like go levels deep into the narcissist's tendencies and be like, look, I love that I'm doing this and it does make me feel special. I just think it's really cool what you do. Yeah. Okay. So one of the first questions that I got was, did he know something was different about him before he was diagnosed?
So yeah. So pretty much my entire like life, I've always known I was different. Like, I didn't like kind of follow the crowds or anything like that. I will always fit in, but it wasn't fitting in just to like be there. It was just fitting in just so I could like observe and stuff like that. I was like, why do people feel this way? You know, I knew like, even as a like 10, 11, 12 year old boy, I knew that like normal people didn't think like this. Like, this doesn't seem normal to me, you know? So I would do whatever I needed to do to be able to fit in and things like that. So I always knew I was like different and kind of, I wouldn't necessarily say off, but because I'm smart, you know, I'm just like, you know, he's different because he's over there stupid, you know, I'm smart and educated and whatnot, so I can talk and I can blend in with anybody. But I always knew that something was, I didn't know anything was wrong with me, but I just thought I was different. I was just like, this doesn't feel normal, you know? And like, even kind of growing up into my like, teens and my like teenage years and my early adult years and things like that, I always like, I was always kind of jealous of people. Like, how do you like, I would see like love stories and like, how do you feel that way? Like, what makes you feel this way about this person? And you know, I would just be so observative about stuff like that. Like, I used to read like Cosmo magazine. I used to take Cosmo into the bathroom and just read it. Like, so this is how you love, you know? I'd be sitting on the toilet like for hours.
Oh, interesting.
Are you still in there? I'm like, I'm sick. You know, I'm in there.
I'm learning how to love, goddamn it.
Yeah. I'm in here reading Cosmo and whatnot, trying to, like, you know, like, because Cosmo is like, it's generally viewed as a women's magazine. So you don't want to be caught reading Cosmo. Like, hey, reading Cosmo, guys, you know.
Right.
You know, so I'm in the bathroom reading Cosmo, trying to learn what do women like? Like, how do I get women to fall in love with me? Do I need to be funny? Do I need to be attractive? Do I need money? Like, what does it take? You know,
okay.
I used to always read stuff like that. I used to go through, like, I didn't have a subscription to it, but I used to go to like Food Line and stuff like that and just, you know, take my dad's child support money my mama used to give to me and go buy Cosmo magazines, like, you know.
Right.
Wow. It sounds weird, but I used to do that all the time. I just like, I didn't think it was different. I thought Cosmo was weird for a man to be reading. You know, I was just like, this is like in the 90s. And I was like, I mean, there's just
flipping through.
I'm in the bathroom scrolling, you know. But
right.
I always knew something was different, but I could never put my finger on it. You know, like, I didn't know there was a word or any kind of descriptive anything for what was going on inside my brain until, you know, adulthood, until my 30s, which is funny, you know?
Yeah. So what was the particular moment that you decided you wanted to go to therapy and try to figure out what was going on?
So I wouldn't say there was like one particular moment in general. Mm-hmm. I would say mm-hmm. it was like an accumulation of things. It's like, it wasn't just like, sure. My wife leaving, I need to go to therapy. It's like, because I've had people leave me before. You know, I was like, I've always felt like, oh, well, you can leave. You are replaceable. Like, you can, mm-hmm. you know, when she left the first time, I was like, you know, she's like, I'm just going to leave. I'm like, well, you can leave. You know, I can replace you. Like, it's nothing. Like, it's not that serious. Like, you know, people come yeah. and go out of my life. And so, like, I was all kind of crazy talk. You know how it goes. But it's just kind of like, it's the fact that when she was leaving, she's like, it's so damn hard to live with a narcissist. I was like, huh? You know?
Oh, wow.
And you know, I'm so analytical and logical, the way my brain thinks. I was like, and the word narcissist in my mind just meant like somebody that was full of themselves and like too overly confident and just full of themselves. I've heard that a bunch of times in my life. So I was like, I'm a narcissist? Like, I'm actually a very helpful and kind and giving person. You're a narcissist. Like, You take hours to get ready. I'm ready to go in 5 minutes. Like, right. So who is the narcissist here? You know, so it was kind of going back and forth with her on that, and then she just like slammed the door and left. So when she left, you know, I'm about trying to download Tinder. Like, you know, I'm about to move on quick. You know, I do. You know, I can do me. I'm going to show her how easily replaced she is. You know, I'm just like, but I got to thinking, I was like, why the hell did she call me that in particular? Like, she could have called me a plethora of different words and things like that. I'm like, why did she choose that word in particular? You know? Mm-hmm. So I got curious. I got on Google. You know how Google like autofill stuff now. I was like, I started typing in narcissist, and it's like filled personality disorder. I was like, huh? I'm like, what is this? So I hit enter on it, and then like it just kind of opened up my world of, you know, of wow. What it was, what's going on with, like, what was going on. I started reading. I was like, so personality disorder? Like, what is this stuff? And I started reading into it and getting deeper into it. And, like, when you read stuff like that, and like I said, I've always known I was different. So you start reading things like that, and it kind of, like, clicks. Like, oh, that's why. But it hurts at the same time because it's, like, it's bad. You know, it's not good mm-hmm. stuff. I was like, mm-hmm. damn, well, this makes so much sense. It's just kind of overwhelming because you kind of start to think about, like, you don't necessarily self-reflect, but you kind of think about all the moments in your life where you've been manipulative and, like, very low empathy. Like, damn, I was supposed to cry that moment. I didn't cry. I didn't really care, you know? It's like, it didn't affect me, really. I mean, my life is going to move on in the moment. So you start to think like that. You start to, like, feel, and then you get into it, and, you know, you kind of think, I don't like being emotional and stuff like that, so I'm processing all this. I'm like, I'm fighting the emotions. Yeah. I'm like, let me text her while I'm in this peak emotion. I'm like, look, I looked it up. I am a narcissist. It's not you. I'm like, please come home. I'll go to therapy, blah, 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 this, you know. And so she came home. She came home before I went to therapy, which if y'all are listening to this, do not accept them back until they go to therapy. Because I did not go to therapy until after she came back, you know. Because, like, if you accept somebody back before they go to therapy, then there's no, you mean, you are, you, so if you accept me back before I go to therapy, then you are taking me who I was before. I've not made any different changes. Like, I'm still the same person I was when you left, that you left me for. Like, I haven't made any different changes. I just made a different promise. So I was like, she came home, and then a few months later, I mean, I didn't go to therapy, and a few months later, she's like, what happened to therapy? We got into arguments. Like, whatever happened to this therapy thing? I was like, huh? You know, I forgot about it. So, like, therapy for you? You know?
For you? Yeah. Oh, so, can I ask a question real quick?
Yeah.
Just before, did you truly intend on going to therapy when you were first texting her about it? Or was that your moment manipulative?
It was in the moment manipulative, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It wasn't intended to go. I mean, in the moment, I think I meant it, but I wasn't like intending on following through. Like, I need to mean this. Like, in my brain, I was like, you need to go to therapy. I was talking to myself, like, go to therapy. Like, okay, cool. And then, like, that's how you get it back home. Like, therapy works. Like, therapy is like, you know, if I say therapy, then people like accept it. People like, you're going to therapy. Like, this is different. You're already taking the first step. the first step is is saying you're going to therapy. It's not going to therapy, you know. So.
That's so fascinating because Dr. Romani said basically, if you find out somebody is a narcissist or has NPD, don't tell them. Don't talk to them about it. Don't confront them about it. So do you have a different opinion on that? Because it sounds like that moment really impacted you and led to therapy, which led to you changing things, right?
I would agree with her on most cases. You can't, because like narcissism is so prevalent in today's society that it's like a derogatory term. You know, it's like you're a narcissist. It's like the bad word. It's like a cuss word now. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's like the next cuss word, like bitch, shit, fuck, you know, right. Right behind there. So if you call somebody a narcissist, you pretty much call them like a, so most like men are mostly narcissists. You know what I mean? The statistics show that most, like not most men, but mostly like.
That most narcissists are men.
Most narcissists are men. Yeah, that's okay. Where it mm-hmm. So it's like the male version of calling somebody a bitch, you know? You're a bitch. Like, you're a narcissist. Like, whoa, that hurt more, you know?
So, right.
So it's kind of a derogatory term right now. So I wouldn't suggest calling them that because, like, everybody, like, most people have heard of narcissism and, like, it's painted in such a bad light, which is deserved, you know, that it's a derogatory term. So people are going to take it, like, any true narcissist is going to take that as a slight, as criticism, as, like, a, you know, as a hateful word to them. And they're going to attack them. They're going to, I attacked, you know, you know,
yeah.
They're going to take it as an attack on them, a personal attack on them. So I definitely would suggest not telling them that to their face. You know, they kind of have to discover it on their, like, I don't think I would have discovered it if she wouldn't have said it, but I'm not like I'm not a physically abusive person. Like, you know, like you kind of know who your narcissist is. I mean, even though you don't really know them technically, you know, you know if they will hit you or not. Like, I've been with this person 20 years, they ain't gonna hit me. You know, they're gonna talk some shit to me, but they ain't gonna hit me. So, you know, but like if they've been beating on you and you wanna call them a narcissist, they might hit you. So it's always circumstantial. Right. In that retrospect right there. Because like you kind of know that person. Like, this person is like is a covert narcissist. He's gonna yell at me and belittle me and call me a narcissist, but like he's gonna hear what I say, as opposed to this person is going to fucking smack me if I call him a narcissist. If I say something mean to him that he doesn't understand, he takes it as a slight, he's going to hit me. So it's all, you know, you can't really tell him. Like, and people ask me that all the time on TikTok and stuff. Like, how do I tell my husband he's a narcissist? How do I tell him? Like, I got a message the other day on Instagram, like, which is the message I love to get. She was like, my husband, like, found out he was a narcissist. I'm like, did you tell him? She's like, no, he was like, literally he got on TikTok and like you popped up on his page and like, wow. He bought the phone to me. It was like, had tears in his face. Like, I'm not alone. You know, he's like, I'm not alone. Oh, in the world. Wow. And like, I'm like, see, I get chill bumps thinking about stuff like that. You know? Yeah. He said, I'm not alone in the world. So I was like, no, he wants to go to therapy and stuff like that. And that was the main point of me starting my page anyway, was to get more men into therapy regardless, you know, and the fact that he saw it on his own, it was just kind of like, I was like, yay, you know?
My wow. God. Yeah. That's that, awesome. The impact that you must be having on people.
On all ends too.
Really?
On people who are leaving relationships and people who have NPD who are getting in therapy. It's mm-hmm. incredible. Yeah,
I get it from both sides of it. You know, I get it from both ends of the spectrum, which I wasn't intending. You know, because like I'm self absorbed. You know, like the outside opinion don't really matter to me. So when I was starting my TikTok, I was just like, you know, I'm going to be the main reason people get into therapy. You know, that's my main reason for starting. Like, you go back and look at my first video, and I was just like, hello guys, my first name is Damon. My name is Damon Lee. So okay. I say, hey guys, my name is Damon, and I do have a mental illness. It's called narcissistic personality disorder, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I wanted that to resonate with people who might have what I have. You know, it wasn't intended to like a victim or survivor to hear and to be like, oh my God, that makes so much sense to me. That was not the intent. And it's kind of manifested itself into that. You know, I was like, huh? You know, yeah. I was like, wait, what happened? Then, I've been so calculated with my TikTok and stuff like that, though, because like I have two TikToks. So you probably don't know, but I definitely have two TikTok accounts. You know, one of them is like geared towards just me being me being funny and just outgoing and stuff like that. Just kind of making jokes and stuff like that. And I started that account January of 2020. And I didn't start my mental health one until May of 2020. Just because I knew people, when I started my mental health account, people were going to say, you're just doing this for clout. And I was like, I have another page that's bigger than this one, actually, you know. Because that page has 219,000 people on it, you know.
Wow. So both of yours have a lot of followers.
Yeah. I was always trying to, when people were trying to doubt me, I was like, you're doing this for clout. I was like, I would screenshot that page and like, actually, I have this page right here too. This, my mental health page now has like 150,000 more. So I can't use that page anymore, you know, but now I'm just like fighting, you know, my right. It doesn't work as much anymore. So, but it's still, you know, I think people kind of get, I mean, there's still detractors and people who think I'm lying and stuff like that. But just saying, those comments bother me more than the good. I love the good comments, of course. I'm like, yay, good, bad. I'm like, huh?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Why is this a bad comment here? Like, what did I do? You know, I'm trying to figure out how do I get this to be a good comment?
Changes.
My therapist said that. She's like, you sometimes you just can't.
Yeah.
I can't. Like, really? Like, what if I tried really hard, you know? And then she's like, now you're going to the other side of the spectrum when people try to convince their narcissist that they are narcissists. Like, you can't do it.
Like, right. You can't
agree. I'm like, okay, I got you.
Right.
I don't want to hear it, but I got you. Yeah.
Right. I want to go back to, so you were saying that a few months later, is it your wife?
Yes.
Your wife. Okay. Your wife was like, hey, what happened to therapy? And you're like, oh, I forgot about it. What happened then?
Oh, okay, so I think, this is 2017. So I think she ended up leaving again. And I actually had to go to therapy before she came back. I think this is what happened. But I ended up going to therapy that year in 2017 and going to see a therapist and things like that. You mean, people, that's one of the main things. It was so hard for me to find a therapist. Like, how the hell do you, like, I remember asking her, like, how the hell do you find a therapist? Like, do I just walk around downtown Greensboro or Durham? I'm like, what do I do? You know?
Stand on a crate outside. I need a therapist.
Sign up, like, point in the direction of a therapist, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, just like, in my community, like, the Black community, like, if you go get help or seek help or something like that, it's kind of frowned upon. It's like you kind of viewed as a weaker person. Like, you're crazy. You know, he's in therapy. Don't listen to this guy. You know what I mean? So you don't want to blurt it out loud. You're going to therapy, you know? So I got on Psychology Today and just put in narcissistic personality disorder. And I just found, you know, I went through scrolling through therapists, whatever. And I sent messages to a few of them. I was like, hey, I'm pretty sure I have narcissistic personality disorder. What can I do? Like, can I come? How do I set this up? You know, how do I set this up? And I remember asking one of my friends too, because like I sent her a message on Twitter. I was like, "Do you think I'm a narcissist?" And then she was like, "I expected her just to say no." She's like, "Yes." One of my friends said it. She was like, "She was like, yeah." But I don't think she knew the person I did this order. But she was just going based on the definition of narcissism, the overall definition. But she's like, yeah, you definitely can be self-centered because, you know, it just so happened like a few years before that I had lost like 100 pounds and I was just like, you know, on this self-betterment journey anyway. And she was like, you kind of started running over people and you start being more outwardly with, you know, with your aggression and stuff like that. And I was like, damn, you know, I shared that message on Twitter like a while ago. I didn't reshare it just to show people. But I just remember that and I was like, damn it, you know. So I definitely need to go. You know, I went to therapy or whatever. I just remember sitting in the therapist chair and like boo-hoo crying the first time. She's like, so what are you doing here at 31 years old? I'm like, you know what? I just crying, you know?
Yeah.
And she's like, I got online and saw the personality disorder that people say you can't love, you can't care for people. And she's like, I just don't, this existence seems meaningless to me. Like, what the hell is the point of living if you can't love and care about people? It's like, you can love and care about people, but you just have to do it in your own way, you know? Like, what is love? Like, and that's why when people always ask me on TikTok and, you know, Instagram and stuff, like, can you love? What is love to you? You know, I heard narcissists cannot love. You know, I was like, what is love to you? Like, what does love mean to you? Because like, I actually posted a video like this yesterday because somebody just got on my, like, because I responded to a comment that said something and they're like, you just don't understand because you can't love. It's like a direct attack to me. I was like, huh? And I was like, if love keeps you bound to a person that's destroying your life, then I don't want to be able to love. You know, like, that's not what I want love to be. Like, love is not like holding on to a person that's hurting you and destroying you. Like, so if that's love, then I don't have it. You know, that's not the type of love that I have in me, you know?
Right.
And right. I just go from there with it. Cause I always ask the question with the question, you know, cause I'm about, like, I don't know if y'all know, I'm about to be on like the doctors. I have a.
Are you?
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's going to be on May the 6th. I'm about to be on the doctors. And they asked me that on the doctors. You know, there's like, can a narcissist love? And I get like, so what is like, it's kind of subjective to the person. Love is not so one definitive definition, you know?
Right.
So, like, by the normal definition of love, like, I feel like narcissistic love is like conditional. Like, I will give you all the love in the world until you break one of these conditions that you might not know I have set. And once you break those conditions, the love is like, take my love away from you. And, you know, and that's where the breadcrumbing comes in. Like, you know what? I'm going to give you a chance to earn it back. Like, trickle these breadcrumbs to you. And, like, I give you such little appreciation of love and let you eat that up. And like, people eat it up so much. Like, they've been destroyed so much that they eat that little bit of love that I give them back. They eat it up. And they accept that. Like, this is such a little amount of love. Like, it doesn't make any kind of sense. Like, I've been doing, like, consultations with people, dealing with this personality disorder, trying to get in my perspective. And like, I've actually spoken to therapists, like want to talk to me, you know, I've talked to them and they're like, I've never thought about it from that direction. Like that empowered me to think about it. Like, they're like, yeah, like, cause you know, I'm all about power and control. So I've kind of manipulated my mind into learning how, you know, people can take their power back. Like, how do I take my power back with somebody who destroyed me? I was like, step one, this, you know, walk in your power, you know, love yourself. That definition of love you have, apply that to yourself, not to this person, you know, because it's crazy. You know, I see some stuff like that. I just like, you know, and like the low empathy, it kicks in a lot of times. Like, why do you think like this? You're not like, why? You know, that's first, I'm like, why? Just leave me. Cheated 20 times. And then they were like, and I just like, I had to kind of put myself in those shoes. I'm like, okay, let me think, you know.
Yeah.
How would I do this? Like, if I was in your situation, how would I get out of this, you know? And it just helps, you know.
Yeah.
That's so, what I like.
Yeah.
I was going to say, how has therapy changed your way of thinking? Like, I think on one of your videos, you kind of talked about like your narcissistic personality disorder isn't cured or gone, but you have the ability to make different choices now. Can you walk us through what a new thought process looks like for you after having therapy?
So I think one of the main differences is like how I respond to my family, you know, because like even my oldest son, he's about to be 13 next month. He said to me a couple months ago, he was just like, yeah, because my youngest son, he was like 4, you know, he's like just at the table doing silly stuff. I'm just like, you know, I just felt it's the littlest stuff. I can just feel it bubbling up. I was like, I'm about to yell at this little man. He about to get the yelling of his life, you know. And he said, my youngest son said something so smart to me and disrespectful. I was about to yell and scream at him. I was like, boy, you don't know who the hell I am, do you? I was like, you about to get this. I'm about to say some rude shit to you. I said it out loud. And my oldest son was like, I don't think you're going to do that, Dad, because like you don't yell and scream as much as you used to. And that is like, you know, that kind of touched my heart. It was like, and it hurt. And it, you know, stuff like that kind of hurts, especially when I'm talking. When I talk about it in the therapy, because like, he's, you know, hold on. Y'all about to get emotional on this shit? Ah!
It's okay. Ah! We cry on here all the time. You can
all
let it
the
out.
Time.
It's fine. Please for crying.
I'm not going to cry now. Because narcissists can't feel, can they? You know?
It's okay.
You're proving everybody wrong.
It's okay. This is a very safe space here.
It gets on my nerves, the fact that like he had to grow up through, you know, 7-8 years of me being like a raging, crazy-ass narcissist, you know, undeveloped, untherapy, you know. And it gets on my nerves. Like, and my therapist, she said, you kind of have to come to terms with it, like, with the fact that you're going to be a different person through all three of your kids' like lives. Like the first kid, you know, he probably got the worst version of you, but he's going to end up seeing the best version of you. The youngest one, you mean the middle son, like he got the I've been in therapy. You know, I thought it was therapy when he was born. You know, because like I forgot to mention this. Like when my wife told me I was a narcissist, like she came home early from work and I was yelling like at the top of my lungs at my 6-7 month old son. I was just yelling at him, you know, I was screaming at him, like, shut the fuck up, you know, I'm just yelling. So I forgot to add that part, you know. So he kind of gets the middle level narcissist, you know. And then my daughter, you know, she's like just born. She's only 2 months old now. So she's going to get the best version of me. And I'm like, it kind of gets on my nerves that like, she's going to get the best version of me, but my oldest son could have got the best version of me, you know. But it bugs me, you know. But my therapist said, you got to kind of, I mean, this one of the things she kind of helps me work on. Like, you got to learn how to forgive yourself, you know, because there's a different part of you that's different. That person is like, he's not dead and gone because he's still in there, because I will rage and scream out. But like, he's more under control. Like, your triggers are under control and stuff like that. You kind of learn to let stuff out before it gets to the point where you feel like you got to, like, it's, you know, I think one of the main things that I used to rage out about is like when I felt unheard, like when people, I felt unheard and unappreciated. And I would just start like, you get to the point where like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to scream at these people. You know, I'm going to yell at these people. I'm going to punch holes. I'm going to do everything I need to do. But and she's like, what were you like when I would rage out? She's like, what were you saying when you were raging out? And I would tell her, she's like, you felt unappreciated, unheard. She's like, I'm like, yes. She's like, well, while you were raging and screaming, did you feel heard? I'm like, yeah. But did you feel appreciated? I was like, no. You know?
Right.
You had one of the needs met. Like, how can you get both of those needs met? Like, by, I guess, you know, talking before I get to that point, you know?
Yeah.
That has helped. You mean, I think, like, since my wife left last April and came back, like, in May, I've only had, like, one rage episode, which I'm proud of, you know? But it was a bad rage. It was a bad rager, you know.
Mm.
But sometimes the rage feels good, though, you know. Like, sometimes, like, I think that's why people, like, my narcissist loves to yell and shout at me, because it feels good. Like, it's just, like, it's empowering to yell and scream at somebody. He's like, I just feel like I just want to punch a hole in the wall now. Like, it feels so powerful, you know. You want to yell and scream and throw shit, because I feel big and powerful now because I'm yelling and screaming. But after the rage subsides, you have this like little brief moment of embarrassment. Like, why the hell am I yelling and screaming? Like, why did I do that? But then the other side of your brain, the narcissism kicks in. Like, you know why you were yelling and screaming, because they got on your nerves. They wouldn't appreciate you. Like, they deserved it, you know?
Right. So
in therapy, it's kind of like fighting yourself. You know, it's kind of like you wake up every day and you kind of have a fight with yourself. And like, I've learned, like, the good side is winning more than the narcissist side, you know? Cause that's why I would tell people I'm not cured, you know? Cause it's still there. I will rage out and scream. I will still manipulate people when I need to. And I will still super gaslight people, you know? And that's why people have their guards up on TikTok and Instagram and whatnot. He's an admitted narcissist. So he has to be gaslighting us. Like, you know, take it for what it is.
Right. Wow. So interesting. Do you feel that you had a family member growing up, or you grew up in an environment that contributed to you becoming somebody with narcissistic personality disorder?
So my therapist, we kind of went over this, like, because my dad wasn't ever really in my life, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, he wasn't like, he didn't abandon us by any means. I knew him, I saw him here and there, you know. He was, you know, he was more like the adult friend, the cool uncle you saw every once in a while. Like, hey, uncle, you know, but it was your dad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't appreciate and give you the love and affection that you needed and craved. And like, no matter how much you did, no matter how hard you tried to get it, you didn't get it. So, you know, and like, I feel like that helped, because I don't have any memories before like age 7, you know. I feel like my mind kind of turned on when I was 7 years old. And like, the first thing I remember is like getting, like, playing the joke on him and trying to get him to come out and play with us. And he ended up coming out outside and like hitting me across the leg. And I just remember that, you know. I just remember like feeling so much pain and anger and whatever, but I didn't cry, you know. I was like, he likes this, I'm not gonna cry. It's 7 year old, you remember, 7 year old. I'm like, I'm not gonna cry. But when he left and we went back upstairs, I was screaming and raging out. I remember just being so goddamn mad at that moment. I'm like, you know what? Nobody's ever going to hurt me again. Like, nobody ever on this planet will have the ability or power to hurt me ever again, unless I can hurt them, you know? So I think that might have been the key point of where all this came from, you know? Because, like, And I always wondered. I never had a relationship with him growing up, so I've always wondered, like, what the hell, you know, like, why did he do that? And then, why am I like this? You know, so I didn't know, like, did he have a dad? You know, I didn't know. So I got on Ancestry.com and got curious. I wanted to fill out my family tree, because I know my grandma and all my uncles and aunts on his side, but, like, I never knew, like, his dad, my grandfather, my paternal grandfather. It's like, so who is this dude? And so I got on Ancestry.com and I actually found out who he was. I found his name and everything. I'm like, yay, I got his name. You know, there's no pictures or whatever. Like, I got his name and the date he died and everything. I don't know if you know Ancestry.com, but it gives you, like, you know, it gives you hints on family members. Like, here's a hint. So I clicked the hint. It just so happened to be my grandfather's death certificate. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, damn, like, this is super intensive, you know. So I get on there. I zoom in, you know. And, like, it's like date of death, time of death. I'm like, dang, he died on a Monday at 5:30 in the morning. I'm like, that sucks. The one I hate, like, maybe it's hereditary that I hate Monday mornings at 5:30. but then you go to the cause of death and it says, like, suicide, like small gunshot wound to the head. I was like, huh?
Wow.
So I was kind of like, wait, so this killed himself? So he decided to get up at 5:30 on a Monday morning, go downstairs with his wife and three kids in the house, and shoot himself in the head in the bathroom. Because of what? Was he suffering from depression? You don't know. This is like, what, the 60s, early 70s, you know? So you just, like, could that have caused my dad to have abandonment issues and not want to be in his kids' lives to the point where he can abandon them like his dad abandoned him? Yeah. So that kind of helped with the, not necessarily forgiving process, but kind of taking some of my power back from him. Because every time I think about him, I used to get mad. I used to be angry and, you know, and stuff like that. But now it's kind of like, man, it is who it is, you know. So that kind of helped. Ancestry.com helped.
Right. Where it's, you know, certain things so horrible, unforgivable, but so fascinating, I'm sure, for you to see into the past and try to understand what made your dad your dad. And, you know, I'm sure you could keep going. What made your grandpa your grandpa? Like, if you were able to get into your great grandpa, you know, it's like.
Yeah. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So, back to some of the questions. So, would a narcissist prefer to break up with someone so they can avoid the feeling of abandonment or rejection? Or would they prefer to push someone to break up with them so they can kind of feel like the victim?
I would say both. Sometimes it could be both, because one person might leave you before you can leave them. Like, I can sense, because, you know, I can be very intuitive. When my wife about to leave, I could feel that she's about to leave. I was like, she's not happy. You know, but I'm not gonna leave her, you know. So if she leaves me, then I have the excuse, like, hey, look, I tried to make it work, but she decided I wasn't good enough, so she left me. So this is why I'm with this person over here, you know. I tried. Hey, daddy tried. Like, you don't have a two parent household because mama decided to leave dad, you know. So sorry baby. Okay. You know, it's okay, don't worry about it, I'm gonna help you out, you know, something like that. So that can be the excuse. Like, sometimes narcissists will push you to leave them so they can have that upfront excuse. Like, I tried my hardest, and she, as you can see, she left. You know, she wasn't happy with my attempts of trying, so she left me. That can be an excuse, but sometimes people will, like, literally build up, like, their arsenal, like their bench, and just, like, you know, want to promote somebody to starter. Like, you know, I'm not happy with this person, so let me leave her at the peak of our relationship, because it's all downhill from here at this peak. I'm going to leave her at the peak and start at another peak with somebody else. I can go uphill. It's kind of like, I leave you at this peak. I meet somebody and we're at this peak at the same time. So but my relationship with you is going to go downhill, but mine with her, it might go uphill a little bit before it goes downhill. So I can start over, start afresh, you know, and it could be like a clean break in my brain, because it's like just a transference of like level. I'm on the same level with this person I am with you, but now, you know, I can still go up. We've reached our peak. We've reached our peak right here. We can only go down, because like, there's nothing more I can do, you know, but right here, if I start here, I can go up. I'm going to drop down sooner or later, but then you end up replacing that person. It's like a continuous cycle that I've seen. I've done it before in my life, like my younger years. You know what I mean? I've like left people at the peak of our relationship and ghosted them and stuff like that for somebody else, you know? I did that when I met my wife. I posted something yesterday on TikTok about that. Like, I went back in the archives of me and my wife's like messages on Facebook, and I met her on Facebook in like 2011, like November. And we kind of started dating. We started officially dating like December 5th of 2011. But December 3rd of 2011, the girl I was originally talking to decided to send December 5th of 2011, she decided to send a very hateful message to my wife about me. She wasn't my wife at the time. She's my girlfriend. But like, she was like, I just want you to let you know, I've been talking to this dude for 8 months and he's never, ever mentioned you. He mentioned you recently, but he just said y'all wasn't serious or whatever. And now you're his girlfriend. I just need to let you know what type of person he really is and blah, blah, blah this. Have a good life. I just want him to be happy, happy he found somebody else. And she sent me that message. I remember her sending me that message and I like heart dropped. I was like, how do I get out of this? I just reread the message and I just started picking it apart. I was like, you can see at the bottom of the message how jealous she is. She said she's so happy I found somebody else. But at the beginning of the message, she was pissed off. Like, so how does this make sense? Like, she's clearly just jealous of us. Like, just block her. I put it on. It's on TikTok now. Wow. It was a couple of days ago.
Wow. Yeah. So you in that moment had that panic of like.
Yeah, your heart dropped. Were you reasoning like that? Were you reasoning like that? I was like, huh? I was like, this from her? Like, damn. I was like, what? You know?
Wow. And you just scrambled to try to, and did your wife believe it?
Yeah. She believed it. Yeah.
The whole like Hoover versus smear campaign, which we talked about, Delaney, you were asking Dr. Romney about it. What differentiates someone being the type of person that you would want to Hoover back after you discard them or are discarded versus do a smear campaign and feel that you will never be trying to Hoover them back in? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I feel like sometimes like I actually had somebody ask a similar question like that today on Instagram. I haven't responded to it yet. Cause I was trying to formulate an answer. But I think I can think on the fly. So I think most like, so people have it so ingrained in their head that like, every narcissist is going to be the same. It's like a blueprint. Like, you know, every narcissist is going to Hoover you some way, shape, or form, you know? So if the Hoover, like, I feel like if the Hoover does not work, like if they cannot get you back into the relationship any way, shape, or form, then they will start the smear campaign. It's like, okay, I've tried, you know, I've tried to make one last grand gesture of relationship. Now let's go over here. And like sometimes the smear campaign can be like it can be a form of a Hoover. Like if I'm smearing your name, you want me to stop? How else do you get me to stop? You have to reach out to me. So you reach out to me. He's like, hey, Kelsey, like, you want me to stop? Just come have lunch with me. Let's sit down and talk this thing out. And a lot of times, you know, I get you to sit down and talk to me. Like, you're like, okay, where? I just want this to stop, you know, and sit down and talk to you. And like the feelings, because it's always better face to face. It's why a narcissist will always try to get you face to face to talk to you. Like, I won't do this over text. Let's talk. Let's meet in person and talk. You know, can you please stop Hoover? Can you please stop smearing me online? Blah, blah, blah. Like, look, I won't do this over text. Meet me at the bar. You know, sit down at the bar and talk. And you see my face, it brings back emotions. It's almost impossible not to have memories of me. Just like the good times. Like,
yeah.
Hey. Wow. Let's talk this out now. Like, I know, like, I got mad. Like, you broke my heart. Like, I tried to get you back. You got mad. So, like, I don't know what to say. I love you. I still love you. I still care about you. Like, so sometimes the smear campaign can lead to me Hoover you back in.
Wow. Like, yeah. Kind of that angle of like, I loved you so much and you hurt me so much that it drove me to do this just because I'm so heartbroken. And yeah. Wow.
And if you take me back, guess what? This smear campaign becomes true.
Wow.
Wow.
Everything I said about you becomes true because like now, like everything I've said about you is true because you take me back. Like, oh, they're back together now. So they must have worked through those issues that he was talking about online. Like, so it was true. Kelsey really did do that, you know?
Holy shit.
It's always next level. This is probably just me, but it's always kind of next level thing with me. I have to go to the next level. Like, right, let me take this. Let me have a backup plan. So, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes the smear campaign can be like when somebody like is smearing you to death, like they know they can't get you back. So they just want to destroy your reputation so nobody else will want you, you know?
Mm.
So it can also work that way as well. So like, I can't have you. No one else will. But I'm not a violent person. I'm a covert narcissist. So let me do it this way. You know, let me destroy you so nobody else will want you. You're gonna replace me? Nah. No, you're not. Not on my watch.
Not today.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Can you explain the reverse Hoover I saw in one of your videos? What is that?
So the reverse Hoover is something like a silent treatment. Like I can give you like after we break up, because in the reverse Hoover is just because narcissism is so ingrained in society that you expect to be Hoovered. So when you, if I do not Hoover you, you like, well, he didn't Hoover me. So is he really a narcissist? Maybe I was wrong. Wait, let me reach out to him. And then you reach out to me. So now I got you. Like I didn't have to do anything. You came back to me. So
dude, you are a magician. That is some mental magic gymnastics. Like
again, yeah. So
David
now,
Blaine.
Yeah, so now when you come back, guess what? You are accepting of the behavior I did before. So there's no forgiveness on your side. You just took me back because in your brain, you convinced yourself that I'm not who I thought, who you thought I was based on me being silent. Now I got you. So,
how does that work with your wife then? Because your wife came back to you. You guys are together. I know it's a little different because you are in therapy. You are self-aware. But like how do you not take advantage of her kindness and her willingness to have you in her life?
So this is the because I get this question or form of this question so much. Like people like, because people generally people will ask like, because you're like, so it works with you and your wife. Because so does being self-aware mean that it works? I'm like, no, it doesn't mean that it works.
Oh,
because, like
people looking for hope. Like,
yeah, people sure. I was like, look, I've been in therapy and diagnosed since 2017. Like she left me in 2020. Like I've been aware of who I am for a long time. So has she. She left me in 2020. So you kind of got to put it together like that. It doesn't always work that way, you know. But right. I think it's just the fact that like when she left, the last time that she left, it just kind of like kicked things. When she came back, it kind of kicked things in motion because like she felt like he has to want me back because he doesn't necessarily need me. Like he doesn't, like I don't need her to cook for me. I don't need her to clean for me. I'm self-sufficient in everything. I pay my own bills. I pay the bills of the house. Like he has to want me back for a reason because like he can move, I can move on, you know, I can do that. But I want her, you know, so I made the conscientious effort. And we've been to marriage counseling too. So I had to make the conscientious effort to prove that I want her in my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so I like every morning, like my marriage counselor said, you have to, what's it called? The three A's, like affectionate, appreciation, and I got the last A. I'll think of it later.
Yeah.
I got two of the A's down.
Yeah. There you go. That's something. So Dr. Romani, in regard to the devaluation phase and the discard phase, Delaney, you had asked what triggers a devaluation phase. And Dr. Romani said it's when the narcissist feels that they have somebody, like they have the power. Would you agree with that in your experiences in your romantic relationships? What triggers the devaluation phase for you? Or is there a particular thing that does?
So it like literally, like I said, remember I said it was it, like love is like narcissist love is conditional. So I feel like it could be triggered by when they have somebody like what she said. Like it could definitely be triggered by some when they like, I got you, you know, I have you. Or it could be triggered by you violating one of those conditions of love that I have set forth. You might not know the conditions, but like you if you violate one of those conditions, then like I can't love you. Like, you're like, in my brain, like, you're not who I thought you were. So I'm going to treat you as such. Like, I remember, like, when I first met my wife, we were like, you know, we were just like, you know, hot and heavy, you know, love bombing and all that other good stuff, hot and heavy and vacationing together, just hanging out together, you know what I mean? And then I remember she told me about, like, an experience that she had. And I was like, wait, with who? And, I ended up having, I knowing the guy, I was like, huh, you're not who I thought you were, you know? And immediately my mindset changed from that point on. I was like, she's not who I thought she was. So I'm like, so you can be fake, so I'm gonna be fake. I'm gonna treat you as such. You know, and my brain just kind of transferred into like treating her bad, treating her worse. Not like, you don't deserve all this love I'm giving you. Let me take it down a notch. Let me pull it down here. Let me pull it down here, you know? And it's just like that. That's what triggered it. Like, I feel like you lose your value to that person, like through violating one of those conditions of love that I have set forth, that you don't know about. You don't know the conditions now. By violating one of those conditions, now you, since you violated the condition, like, you don't deserve as much love as I used to give you. So you're not worth as much. So your value has lessened to me. So yeah. Now you're being devalued. You know, because in my brain, it's deserved. You know, you deserve this devalue. You're not as valuable now. So I'm bringing you down here. Well, I feel like you deserve, you know. And it's just how my brain, I remember that moment. I was sitting on the bed at the beach. I remember the exact moment. I can tell you the exact moment. I just remember that because I was like,
You know? Yeah. And it was something that she was just, like, was it something that she even thought was like a high stakes thing to, she was just like, sharing a story with you, and she had no idea that that was going to be the thing that
you don't know the conditions. So you're talking freely because you trust me, you love me. You're like, this person is unlike anybody I've ever met. So you're just sharing your life. It just so happened that you sharing your life story got on my nerves. I'm like,
oh my gosh, you know? Like playing Minesweeper. Like, you're just like clicking around, talking, laughing, having a good time. Yep. And then it's like,
you hit the bomb. Yep. You hit the bomb. Do the whole board up. Yep. You don't even know the bomb.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, can you spot other narcissists, and is it off-putting or is it attractive to you? Do you want to be friends with other narcissists or romantically involved? Can that shit work?
Romantically, I've dated another narcissist before. So I got a taste of my own medicine, so to speak. You know, I don't think that can work. You know, because like I feel like I was trauma bonded. I don't like that. You know, so I don't think that can work.
Yeah.
You know, but. Spotting other narcissists in my life now, yeah, I can spot them now. I have to talk to them and get to know them before. Like, wait, you got some shit going on. I can feel it. You know, your energy is different. You know, so I'll share, like, just to get them on the level, I'll share, like, some darkness with them. And they're like, yes! I'm like, gotcha. I knew it.
It's like you have, like, the shining, you know, where, like, you can talk.
Knew it. Knew it, you know?
It's like a metal detector.
Yeah. Because my friends and family see my videos and stuff now. So they like, they've opened up to me a little bit more as well. Cause like people, like one of my best friends is like, he's like open. Like, we've had long conversations about this. Like, he's openly admitted that he's a narcissist. Like, he's like, yeah, I'm 100. Like, after watching your videos and stuff like that, I'm 100% a narcissist. Like, I know, you know.
And we've kind of
bonded over that. You mean, it's like one of my best friends. I'll go to like one of the rare people in this world I'll go to war for, you know. Yes, you know, he's like his story, like he's been created to be the way he is. Like, you, like, can you hold it against him? Yeah, but like, that's how he was raised. That's how this is his defense mechanism.
Yeah. And
he tries his best, you know, but like that's my man. So I would defend that malignant narcissist to the end, you know what I
mean?
Yeah. I get it. My wife don't like it as much. She's like, he is such a narcissist. Like, yeah, but you kind of got to, you know, you got to feel it. You don't feel it like I feel it, you know? It's my man's, you know? Right.
This is an interesting question that came in. What made you initially attracted to your partners, and was it out of good intent?
I've never been like the person, like, I'm going to just get her and ghost her. You know what I mean? I've always been like, like I said, I used to read Cosmo magazine. I used to watch Disney movies. So I always wanted to be a Disney prince. You know, I want that. You know, I was like, I want to be the person to sweep you off of your feet, you know? So that's what you learn. Like, I feel like people like narcissists are so manipulative. Like, I learned it from Disney. Y'all watching Disney movies want to be the princess. So I want to be the prince. And then like, that's how it happens. And like, it's so like, you watch Aladdin, you watch like Frozen and stuff like that. You watch those movies and you like, you want to be the princess. You're like, I want to be Anna so bad, you know? And you get, instead of Kristoff, you end up with Hans, you know? Because Hans had a first, you know, Hans, his thing is crazy. We finish each other's sandwiches. Yeah, you know, Hans was a damn narcissist. Like, you watch the movie, you watch Frozen with Hans as a narcissist in your brain. You're like, damn, he is. You're like, it's like crazy. Hans was lying from the jump. But yeah, like, I don't know, like, it could be true for some people, yeah. It can be out of ill intent, but like, to me, it's like never been out of ill intent. It's like, literally, I want to, you know, be with this person. I want to make this person happy. I want to get this person everything. And like, but I'm not a damn Disney prince. So once I can't hold this up for too long. Like, ooh, I can't do this, you know? And then when you stop doing it, it's like, hey, you're not the person I met. I'm like, I am the person you met. I was trying to get you, you know, now you're here. So this is who I really am. You like it? You still like me?
Right.
I don't know. You end up staying trying to get that person back. You stay because you're trying to get the Disney prince back. Like, the Disney prince wasn't necessarily there, you know. I read that. I learned how to be that.
Yeah.
I developed him.
Wow.
And then I can blame you for thinking that. It's like, that isn't real. Like, this stuff isn't real. Like, I was sweeping you off your feet. This is men are supposed to do. Like, you know, Aladdin did this. Aladdin lied to Jasmine. They end up happily ever after, you know?
Aladdin did lie to Jasmine pretty fucking hard.
He was not going to tell the truth. Aladdin would have never told the truth. All that stuff wouldn't happen to him, you know? it wasn't a point in him telling that. It was no point in Aladdin telling the truth until everything started falling apart, like me. Everything, like, my life falling apart. Let me go to the genie for therapy. You know, genie's like, look. Like, be real. Yeah, be real with her, man. Be real with her. She look the real you. And in the narcissist brain, she can't love Aladdin. She can only love Prince Aladdin or whatever his fake persona was. That's the only person she can love.
Oh, Prince Ali.
Ali. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She can't love Aladdin for himself. Like, yeah. Why would she love a street urchin or whatever, street thief? Like, but she loved the prince, you know? So that's how I felt. I'm like, why would she love this street urchin? Like, why would she love me at this point? She loved this person. Yeah. So it's kind of confusing. It's like deeper, you know?
Yeah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is so interesting, and thank you to my followers on Instagram for submitting such great questions. And Delaney, do you have any other questions?
Oh God, I have 5,000 questions. I guess this one, can you share some examples on how a narcissist might isolate you from your friends or family? What kind of things might they say to influence you in that way?
Why are you sharing everything? Like, why are you telling your friends about our relationship? Your friends don't need to know about what's going on inside of our house. Like, kind of keep that in between us. So you start wanting to be less around your friends and start sharing with your friends less. then like, or like, let's move across the country. Let's move over here. Let's go, like, quit that job that you need, you know? Now you're like, if you quit your job that you love and need to be a stay-at-home mom, or, you know, sometimes it happens like you stay-at-home husband or stay-at-home man, like, now you financially dependent on me. So now you're under my thumb. Like, you can't do anything without my say-so. The isolation, especially with the family members. I think I did a video on this recently. Like, don't tell your mom and dad. Your mom and dad do not like me, so I don't want to be around them. So if they have an event, do not invite me to the event, because I don't like going places where I'm not liked, where I'm not appreciated. So when you get ready to leave to that event, like, have fun, leave me here by myself. So now you don't want to go to the family's event. Now you spend time with me. Like, so people stop inviting you to stuff. Like, well, Delaney doesn't show up ever, so why should we invite her? Like, I'm not going to invite Delaney anymore for her to just say no. And that happens now. Mm-hmm. Delaney doesn't have any time with her mom and dad now. Now you're by yourself. Now you're with me, Delaney. Now we're besties.
Yeah. Wow. Can you share how social media become like a stage for assist after a discard, and why is that? What is this thing called social media?
Showtime, because it's used. It can be used to 100% hurt you. That's why I tell people, like, you need to don't watch the. If you get discarded or whatever, do not watch the social media, because it's literally showtime. Like, hey guys, I met this girl. She's the love of my life. Like, I know I've been through some terrible relationships in my past. Like, that's all aimed to hurt you. Like, who the hell else would read that and feel some type of way other than you? You know, I'm the happy. I'm the happiest I ever been. Like, eat instead of Delaney with an IE. Yeah. Like, stuff like that is meant to hurt you. You know what I mean?
For you know sure, mean? Yeah.
Wow. Like, it's meant to hurt you. Like, showtime. I'm gonna put on the most spectacular show to show you that I'm doing better without you. Not that I'm doing well. I'm gonna be doing better without you. It is all geared to hurt you. They're like, don't watch the social media, because it's going to hurt you. Like, you're gonna go looking for pain, and you're gonna find it. Like, yeah. How did he move on 3 days after we broke up? Like, that person was already in the picture. Like, there's no, I can't go get a girlfriend right now 3 days later. Like, baby, we done. You know, Tinder and find. I can't do that right now. So this person's already around. You know, that person's already in the wings waiting, or already, you know. That person's already there. They didn't just move on 1 week later. That person was already in the picture. I feel like people think, like, they moved on so fast. Like, that person's already there. It's not as fast as it seems when you, like, look at it from where you peel back the layers. Like, wait, they've been talking for 6 months. So it makes sense on the other person's end. Like, we've been together for 6 months. On your end, like, they've only been together for 2 weeks online, you know? So it looks fast, but it's not really as fast. So there's layers. Peel back the layers like an onion, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. So there was another thing on one of your videos that says, like, a narcissist will never forget you. What does that mean? Like, if you've been discarded by somebody that was your narcissistic supply, will you always kind of want to seek revenge, and will you act on that? Like, how does that shit work?
So with me, like, I don't think I would ever forget the people who hurt me, you know? Like, it's just like, I just want to hurt you some way, shape, or form. Like, not physically. I'm not physically abusive. No, like, mentally, I just want to get into your brain one time, you know? Right. One time. If I got to be on TV, your favorite TV show or something like that, you can watch the TV with your new husband and new family or whatever, you're eating snacks. And you see me pop on your TV show. Even though I won't see you feel it, I'll know you feel it, you know? It's just like knowing. Knowing helps, you know? Knowing definitely. knowing helps, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
Knowing definitely helps.
Yeah. Do you feel that, because you were saying there's pretty much always somebody kind of like waiting in the wings when a discard happens. Like, you were talking about, okay, well, we've reached this peak here with this person, but maybe there's a little bit more mileage left here.
Yeah.
Does a narcissist ever discard with the intent of potentially trying to, like, pick it back up at a different time? Or, like, are you guys thinking that far ahead, or in the moment, are you just like, I'm kind of done with this, I'm going to see what this is? Is that, you know what I'm saying?
I feel like it can be a little bit of both, because, like, a lot of times you'll see, like, a narcissist break up with somebody and then circle back to them. Like, keep them on a hook. Just like, why did I leave? Like, why did I leave Delaney for Kelsey? Well, I just don't like, I'm like, why did I, why
that's
did I
right.
Do that? Like, we had such a good relationship. Like, why not? I'm just so stupid. You know, just like, you know, I don't know. Like, have you moved on yet? Like, I don't know. Just ignore me. You know, it's just stupid stuff like that to keep you on the hook. Like, to keep you from, just to keep you from moving on. Like, especially if they don't give you closure. Like, people crave closure so much. If I don't give you closure, then the relationship is not officially closed. Like, I could move on with this person over here, but you never got closure. So you're like, wait, how long does, like, I get people ask me all the time, like, how long does the love bombing stage last with the next supply? Like, it could be forever. You just never know. Like, just don't worry about it. Like, please move on. I know it's not that easy, but, like, you know, it's just like, it could be a very long time. But, like, if they never offer you closure and want to remain good friends with you after abandoning you, like, viciously, they are intending to keep you on the hook. Just in case the other relationship doesn't pan out, they can just circle back to what they know. Because, like, once you're in strange territories of being single, and if I happen to get discarded, like, I go back to what I know. Like, I know you. Like, we were good together, weren't we? Like, come on, let's do this, you know.
Even if you've already discarded that person in the past.
Yeah, because some people are still so emotionally attached, they will take me back, open arms. I will convince, like, sometimes you convince them that it's their fault. Like, we didn't work out. Like, well, if you did, like, this person does this and does this and does this, and now it's kind of make you compete with them. Like, now you trying to do this on your end. Like, well, I can do this better. I can go to the gym. I can go, you know, I can go back to school. I can get educated. You know, now you're competing with the new supply to be better than the new supply. So if I ever leave that person, like, I did everything you said I should do. Now I go back to you. So now we have a new peak. Now our peak is raised, you know, like, now you're the person I wanted you to be. And a little while later, like, discarded again, you know. It's just get to a point.
That's so fascinating to me that you were talking about that conversation with your wife where she opened up to you and you went into that devaluation phase.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't who you thought she was.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to me that you can see her so differently and then to the point of potentially, like, discarding, but then – How does your mind then get back to a place of valuing her enough to want to be with her still after you've devalued her? Does that make sense?
Sometimes it can be just time. And then sometimes you kind of can see the potential in this person. Like, you kind of go through this internal battle with yourself. Like, is it really that serious? You know, like, this is way before you. Like, this person didn't know you existed. Like, all right. It's kind of like the existence crisis I go through in my head, like, every day. Like, is it worth it? Can we make this work? Like, can you get past this? Like, can I? It's like a battle. It's like, literally, it's the battle, like, every day, like, decision. Like, I feel like this what therapy has helped me with the most, like, decision making and impulse control more than anything, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not as erratic as I used to be. Like, I just don't make, like, volatile decisions. Like, hey, let's do this. Yeah, I don't just do that now, you know. I'll think about it and just, like, kind of weigh my options and make a decision based on like logical facts as opposed to my like, you know, my erratic emotions in the moment. That makes sense.
Yeah. There's a theme with your videos. I noticed that, like, guilt comes up a lot. Can you talk about how guilt is weaponized against the person that the narcissist might be in a relationship with?
Oh yeah, like that's one of the things I say. I did a video the other day. It's like guilt can be used against you. Like, if I can create just a semblance of guilt in you, it's just like, look, you gave up on us. Like, I didn't break up with you. You broke up with me. Now our family is torn apart because you decided to do this. Now you feel a little guilty. You're like, damn. Like, now my kids have to grow up in two households. Now, what do I do? What do I do? Could I, you know, now in your brain, it's like, you don't know what to do. It's like, it's just guilt and confusion. Like, you shouldn't even feel guilty about that, making the decision that's going to be best for you. But, like, if I can use a little bit of guilt, you know, especially if I share some trauma with you, like, look, this is what I went through as a kid. Like, I have abandonment issues and you are just adding to that now by abandoning me. Oh, I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to add to those issues. I don't want to add to this trauma. Like, so you don't leave. Now you stay, now you still unhappy, but now you don't leave because you don't want to be guilty. And I see like people like like the threat of like unaliving themselves is like prevalent with narcissists. Like if you leave me, I'm just going, there's no point in me living anymore. And they use it. Oh my, that's so, I hate that so much. Like it's so weaponized. It's like, there's no point in me living anymore. If you leave me, I'm just going to, you know, I'm done with living, you know? And I hate, that's one of the things that I hate. That's one of my, like, kind of my, my triggers, you know, because I hate seeing like that weaponized against people. Like, it's not your responsibility to keep somebody alive. You're not a paramedic, or are you?
Right.
You are.
Yeah.
If you are, then, you know.
Yeah. Right. I've seen that you're also a huge proponent of no contact. Can you explain why no contact is something that you kind of recommend versus some of the other methods like gray rocking or whatever else is out there?
No contact works. You know, I think gray rocking works to like when you get out of a relationship, to get out of relationships, to like break the bonds and things like that. But I think no contact is the best way when you get out of a relationship, especially if you don't have kids. Like, just don't contact me, because like, especially don't meet up with me in person. Like, I know it's hard to just block somebody, but like, if you meet up with me in person, it's a lot harder to say no to my face. Like, you know, it's a lot, I mean, just human nature. Like, you don't want to see somebody that you love and care about for so long, like in person, boohoo crying because you lost them. You're like, please, I'll change, please. You know, it's hard for you to say no, like, unless you stone face, unless you got down, went through it. You're like, look, no. Yeah, if you can look at my face and say no, I got tears and snot running in my eyes, like, you are a soldier. You know what I mean? No. No. I said no, I'm still saying no. You know, you can do that, then, hey. If you can do that, then you're a soldier. You know what I mean? I just know it's tough on people to do that, you know.
Yeah.
Like, just slowly. Like, no, it's hard to go cold turkey. You know what I mean? It's so hard to go cold turkey, you know. Just with anything, it's like with any addiction. I've heard like the narcissist become addictive to you. So it's just like with any addiction, it's hard to go cold turkey. So you need to like find a support system and like definitely no contact. Block it. Block me. Because if you don't block me, I'm gonna hammer away at you. You know, just like if I hit this piece of coal enough, this diamond's gonna open up. Hey, it's diamond in there. You know?
It's like the cat scratching on the door. Yeah. Like, all day. Late. I'm not gonna stop. Yeah.
That's exactly how it is, though, you know. So no contact is like the best, because like if you can break the bond with no contact, it's gonna hurt at first, from what I hear, but like on my end it's gonna hurt anyway. You like, so this motherfucker, like, I want to contact you, I'm gonna get you back in my life. So if you like, and it hurts me not hearing from people, but like if you can go no contact, like, and get through the barrage and stuff that I put you through, then like you can win. But like if you respond, and like it's like relapsing. And I get this so much, like I was in no contact for 3 weeks and I just relapsed because it was Easter. Mm. I had to wish this person a happy Easter or a happy birthday or something like that. And when you break no contact, you can get your feelings hurt really, really bad.
Right.
Like really bad.
Yeah. Right.
So you gotta be careful with that no contact stuff. Like stay the course. Because if you don't, I'm gonna get you. That's how I feel. You know?
Yeah, there's really no gray area. It sounds like with the no contact, it's like you don't like, don't dip a toe. Like,
yeah, don't be friends with me. God, like, can I still be friends with my narcissistic ex? Like, why would you want to be friends with me? Like, somebody that put you through hell, you're gonna be friends with me? You really want to be my friend? Okay, bestie. I got this girl I'm going to see tomorrow night. What's the best way I can treat her better than I treated you? Answer that question. Hey, we're besties though, right? We're friends. Answer that question. You don't love me anymore? Be my friend and help me treat this other girl better. Like, you don't want to do that.
Right.
Just go away, you know?
Well, yeah, it sounds like the relationship you have with your wife is so rare. Well, I mean, you being a self-aware narcissist is rare.
Yeah.
But that whole Dr. Romani was talking about that you can't win with a narcissist is like the overarching thing that happens a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And you saying like, you being like, you want to be friends with me? That's so interesting, because when I think that if you were to start devaluing somebody and then they were to want to stay, it seems like that almost becomes unattractive to you, because you're like, well, why don't you respect yourself enough
to
leave? However, if they leave, then you're like, well, now but don't leave me. Yeah, like, it's that.
Let me leave you. Yeah, don't leave me. Let me leave you. Don't leave me. Let me dip first. Like, don't abandon me. Yeah. That's when he tries so hard to get you back. Even though they devalue you to a point where you like don't care anymore. Like, let me leave you. Don't leave me. Because it's still the same. It still has the same effect as like leaving me fresh. You know.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I think the relationship with my wife is like, it's still, I have to win, but it's like more and more along the lines of like win-win, you know, like I kind of like, it's kind of a win-win situation. It's like, I present arguments and stuff like that. Like, will I lose crazy? Yeah. You know, like I think I win by being able to talk about it. So I still win, you know, I still win. Like, did I lose? Like, was my point stupid? Like, yeah, it's kind of stupid. I won by talking about it. I still win, you know. I won. Yay. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you share how a narcissist might apologize to you?
Yeah. I've said this to my wife before. She's like, I was like, look, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry your feelings are hurt, but like, I can't help that I'm such a good arguer. You know, I've just been arguing my whole life. Like, sorry. I'm truly sorry for that. Like, I can't help it, you know? I came from the street. I've been arguing my whole life.
The LeBron of arguing. I've got great numbers. What do you want from me?
I've been padding these stats for a long time. Like, I'm undefeated arguments in my brain.
Wow.
But like an apology from a narcissist, like literally, it's a lot of times it's going to be either backhanded or it's going to be or it's to gain something. Like, if we're arguing and you are right, like, I'm sorry. Like, can you shut up now? Yeah, like, can you be quiet about this? Like, I apologize. I'm so sorry. Cool. Peace. Let me watch my movie. Let me go. Let me do what I was doing. Sorry. You want me to hear you say sorry? You want me to apologize? Okay, cool. I'm so sorry. Bye. We done? Mm. Cool. You know?
Oh. Mm-hmm.
You know? It's just weird. It's just funny. I distinctly remember saying that, though. It's hilarious when I said that. I was like, I'm such a good arguer.
Is it a lot of like, I'm sorry you feel that way, but here's where I'm coming from kind of thing too? Yeah. Like, is there a justification process?
I have to justify it in my brain, you know, it's just like immediate justification. It's like a little inkling, you know, it's just like, I think my therapist called it the spectrum of remorse and the spectrum of guilt. Like, I feel it in the moment, but then I kind of justify it in my brain. So it's just kind of like, okay, I get it, but my brain says this. I know what you're saying. I know logically it makes sense. But my brain said this. I'm gonna go with my brain, you know?
Yeah.
Wow.
So you're saying right before, Del, you were asking your most recent question about the apologizing. You're saying that it hurts you just as much to be left if you're in a love bombing phase with somebody as if you were also in the devaluation phase with somebody. Like, if you've already gone into devaluing somebody, or you're in like the beginning love bombing, great. If that person leaves, you're saying that it hurts you the same amount?
It just hurts regardless. This is like, to me, it's like abandonment. It's like, it might not be at the same level, but it's still abandonment. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm love bombing you, giving you all I got, you ghost me, it hurts. I'm like, damn, what did I do wrong? You know, it hurts. Like, you ghosted this? Damn.
This is the Prince Ali version of me. Yeah. What?
Right. You ghosted, like, you see all these elephants and shit I got here dancing? Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Right. You mentioned something called like plausible deniability and how you can set yourself up for that later on. Can you explain a situation where that might be the case, where it's like you can, in the future, you can say, I never said that, but you're kind of saying that in the moment. Like,
Oh, yeah. Because like, I used to do that with my wife. She had these like pair of pants I used to hate. I was like, I can't stand these pants on her. So I always just say like, you like those pants? Those are your favorite? So, yeah, I like them. I'm like, cool, okay. Every time I see them, I was like, not just like, those again? Oh, nice, you know? Cool, nice, awesome. You know, like, do you not like these pants? Like, I never said I didn't like those pants. You think I don't like them because I talk about them. Like, they're your pants. Like, you want to wear them? Like, go about it. You know, I never said you shouldn't wear them or they didn't look good. You created that in your own brain. That was not me. Sorry.
Oh my God, my head hurts just hearing that. That's so hard.
Oh, sorry. You know, I didn't. But did I say it?
Oh no!
Interesting.
That's tough.
Is it not true? I did not say that, though. Did I? You said it.
So what is what's the fear of being direct? Like, hey, babe, those are not my favorite pants on you. I think you look better in these other pants. Like, what's the fear of kind of just being direct about something like that?
Because you can say I said it, you know, and like it directly came from me. Because there's no ability to manipulate you later on it. Like if I say it directly, then like I'll say it now because like I've been in therapy. I'll just say like, hey, yeah. I wouldn't say about all the clothes and stuff like that, you know,
right?
Got a baby and stuff like that, you know. You're beautiful, you know. But if I like, because it just gives me the ability to say something different later on in the relationship. Like I never said it. You can't hold it against me if I never said it, you know. Like, so if I say it out loud, if I express myself out loud, you can use it against me to hurt me or to like manipulate me possibly. So if I never said it, I never said that, Delaney, my wife, D-Y. I never said it out of my mouth. You said it. You created this reality in your head, gaslighting. You know, you gaslight now. You're like, wait, did he really say that? No, wait.
Oh my gosh.
He didn't say it. So he's right. He never said it. I said this. So do I have body image issues? It's all in my brain. Like now I win. Now you're confusing yourself. Now I gotta do it. I don't have to say another word now about those pants.
Well, and that's the power of gaslighting too, is that if those sort of situations start to accumulate, then you can start to keep a running tally in your head of all of these times that you were quote unquote wrong or quote unquote like, you know, misinterpreted.
I know what I meant. You know,
right?
What I meant.
Misinterpreted what the sure, yeah. And then that's when people start to completely doubt themselves and doubt their own sense of right and wrong and what's going on in the relationship. It's gaslighting is a really dangerous, slippery slope.
You cannot prove it. I said that, you know, so it's this thought, like, because I didn't say it. You know, you know what I meant. I know what I meant, but I never said it. So,
wow.
Take it for what it is. Wow.
For the people listening right now, what would you say to somebody who thinks they have NPD, and what would you say to somebody who thinks they're in a narcissistic relationship? What would you say on those both ends of that spectrum to those?
So I feel like if you have NPD, if you feel like you have narcissistic traits or tendencies or whatever, I feel like therapy is hope. You know. Mm. If you don't like mental illness's approach, or is it Dr. Romney, or a lot of these other mental health creators, you know, on TikTok and stuff like that, if you don't like their approach, go talk to a therapist so you can be a personal setting where you can express yourself is more empowering than anything I can imagine. Because I say a lot of stuff on TikTok and I say a lot of stuff on Instagram, but I don't say everything. You know, I don't say everything that's going on in my brain because people wouldn't like me but if I say everything that's going on in my brain, you know? And that's cool, but I can say everything's going on in my brain. I can say to my therapist, and she doesn't judge me. You know, she comes, she gives me an explanation behind it. I try to rationalize it in my brain. If it doesn't make sense, we'll go over next session. You know, so I feel like therapy is key. Therapy is power. Therapy is taking. If you are a narcissist, you're all about control and power anyway. So therapy is about taking back your power and control of your own existence, of our own like. Like, why are we here? Therapy is giving yourself the power to have a purpose. Because, like, that's the biggest struggle I think I had before I went to therapy was, like, I didn't have a purpose. So I was throwing shit at the wall, trying to get it to stay. Like, I'm going to do this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this. You know? I feel like therapy has given me the purpose to be who I am now and talk openly to y'all about how I feel and what I think, you know? Yeah, people are going to judge me. People will see this and, like, he's a narcissist and he's an evil person, you know, even though the stuff I say helps people, you know. On the other end of the spectrum, if you're dealing with a narcissist relationship, it's not, I know you want to try to fix somebody. I know you want to try to help because a lot of people who are in narcissistic relationships are healers and empaths and things like that. You want to try to fix the person because you've given yourself all the love and you've given them all the love and care that you possess. But by giving them all these pieces of yourself, you started to lose those pieces of yourself. You can't give more to somebody than you give to yourself. So if you are happy giving more to yourself to somebody else than you are to yourself, then stay in your relationship, you know, stay, be happy, you know. If that's your version of happiness, then so be it. I'm not judging anybody. Like, because everybody I talk to does not want to leave their narcissist. Cool, right? Everybody's game. If you make it work, if that's your prerogative, cool. I'm not here to judge nobody. I don't judge. People don't judge me, but I'm not here to judge anybody. But, like, stand in your strength and learn to love yourself more, like, than you love the other person. Because, like, self-love is so empowering. Like, self-love on both ends of the spectrum is so – it gives you your power. Like, if you feel like you can stand – if you're not being gaslit or manipulated or getting your ass beat or anything like that, like you can – can you make it work? Probably. I don't know. Yeah. If somebody told my wife to leave, she'd have left. You know, I probably wouldn't be who I am right now, you know. But yeah. If you are, like, everybody is not me, though. Like, I'm just, like, always, like, I'm always, like, in, like I just, I'm so inquisitive and logical. I want to know why I do what I do anyway, you know. Yeah. A lot of narcissists have addictions. My addiction is the human brain and how it works and how it functions, like, why I'm doing what I'm doing. Like, my addiction is people. Like, what makes you tick? You know, I want to know how you tick. Like, why do you love this person so much? Like, why can't you let go? You know, I like this. That's my, yeah, I love that feeling. I'm like, I'm just inquisitive, you know?
So, yeah. Yeah.
To everybody, self-love is best.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that.
Lee, this might be one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. Yeah. We've been doing the podcast for
almost
coming
four
up
years.
On 4 years. Yeah. And we've done over 200 episodes. And
yeah. I mean,
yeah. Like,
yeah. Thank you so much. I mean,
yeah. Really, really interesting. And God, thank you for doing what you do online and for coming on to our show and opening up to our listeners. And yeah. Thank you. You're wonderful.
Changing a lot of lives. And
yeah, that's the goal. We made.
World needs you. Yeah. Thank you.
I watch a lot of, I watch and listen to a lot of Tony Robbins. He says, if you help more people, like the more people you help, the more you help yourself. So that's all I'm been about anyway. So it's just kind of like, hey, I'm helping the more people I help. Like, I am getting better at this, you know? Right. Like, I like doing this. I like talking openly about it. Like, it feels like I can be myself. Like, I can talk to y'all openly and talk to me. I don't tell y'all the wild craziness. It gets deeper, you know, but like,
yeah.
I feel like this is my platform to be able to be open and be myself and talk to people, you know, and mm-hmm. help people. Like, by me just talking about myself, I'm helping others. So it's kind of like a win-win, you know, win-win. See?
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And where can people find you to keep learning more about all of this?
So if you are on TikTok, it's I'm at Mental Healness, like heal, like HEALNESS, Mental Healness on TikTok. I'm on Instagram is Mental_Healness. I'm on Twitter as Mental Healness as well, but I don't tweet as much, you know. YouTube, I have a YouTube channel, Mental Healness, but I have a segment I'm doing called The Narcissist Code. I'm writing a book called The Narcissist Code as well. It's going to be out here pretty soon. It's going to be fire.
Congrats. Amazing.
All this podcast verbalized and some inner, it's deep. It's going to be fire.
Awesome.
The block is hot, as Lil Wayne said.
Well, we wish you just the absolute best in on your journey with this and continuing to spread awareness and helping people.
Well, I appreciate y'all having me on, you know, offering me a chance to talk about narcissism from a different angle.
Totally, totally. Well, thank you, Lee. It's great to meet you, and I hope that you have an awesome day.
All right, likewise. Thank y'all.
Bye, Lee.
See ya.
Wow.
What a fucking episode. Seriously? I mean, I can't imagine what it's like for him to be experiencing what he's experiencing as far as helping so many people. And on his videos, like all of his platforms, he's often encouraging people to leave their relationship because that person has what he has. Like, that's got to be such a crazy, like, layered experience of awareness, right?
Kind of be straddling that line all the time and like almost like playing for both teams.
Yes, right? Exactly.
And listening to the Dr. Romney episode, that was like a protein shake's worth of NPD information. I mean, it was just packed full.
Jam-packed, yeah.
Of so many questions answered. And then this one, so many questions were answered with Lee, and yet
Oh my gosh, endless questions.
Endless questions where you could keep going. And so, listeners, if
this seems to be a topic that has resonated a lot with you. And if yeah. you want us to try and have Dr. Ramani on again, if you want us to try and have Lee on again, send us your questions and your experiences. And we are happy to make this one of those kind of like yeah. ongoing here and there things that we dip back into and learn more about. Thank you again to Lee for coming on and being so vulnerable. Wow.
So yeah. Oh, and one of his videos, somebody had a question like, you hype so many women up, you know, who are leaving relationships and stuff. Do you ever hype your wife up? And then there's a video of him singing to his wife, like encouraging her. What is that? You know that song that he's always using in his videos? I love it, where it's like, get that degree, do. What? I'm not cool. Oh. I don't know the song. You know what I'm talking about?
Like a Baby Shark song? I don't know
what a Baby Shark is, but yeah, it's a great song. And he uses it anytime he's like showing you a message of somebody saying thank you so much, like I left the relationship or I'm strong. I'll have to think of the. I don't know. I have to listen to the lyrics, but I thought that was really. I thought that was a pretty funny one.
Yeah, and it's watching him get emotional, thinking about his son, mm-hmm. which is his firstborn son, and that his son went through those really hard times with him. That's interesting too, because it sounds like so many things that people bring up with NPD is that they are sometimes incapable of feeling empathy or emotion mm-hmm. in that way. And I will be interested to understand more about his journey as he goes forward, because that's a question. Again, we have so many other questions now, but I'm like, I wonder, do you think you would have had that sort of emotional response before therapy?
Right.
Or do you feel like is that part of your growth? Or is that something that's always there and you can tap into that sort of empathy for your child in that way? And man.
Yeah. And it's amazing to see all the people writing into him, because it's like one thing he shares, it's a message from somebody who's saying, thank you for helping me realize what was going on and leave my relationship. And the next message is, thank you so much for making me feel like I'm not alone. I also have NPD. Like the impact he's having on all ends of this spectrum is truly remarkable. I loved talking with him.
Yeah.
We do have a quotable for this episode. And this was submitted by Helpster Amanda on Patreon. It is a Robin Williams quote. And it says, I used to think the worst thing in life was to end up all alone. It's not. The worst thing in life is to end up with people who make you feel all alone.
Oh. By Robin Williams.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And if you want to submit a quotable that will get read on the show, you can head over to patreon.com/selfhelpless.
And that quote is so spot on with this episode, I think, because people with NPD talk about how alone they feel in mm-hmm. it. And then survivors of NPD abuse talk about how alone they feel to go through those symptoms and side effects of it as well.
It's sad on both ends, no matter, you know, which end of the spectrum you're talking about. And, you know, we have an immense amount of compassion for anybody who has dealt with this or is dealing with this on either end.
You know? Yeah. We also have an iTunes review of the episode. This is from LPF 2018. It says, love this. I feel like these girls are so honest and real, and I love hearing their take on all things self-help, especially during the pandemic. There is so much clutter when it comes to finding ways to self-help/self-care, but I feel like I can trust these girls to share good tools. I look forward to it every week. Aw, thank you.
That's very sweet. Thank you so much.
I'm glad you feel that we're a good resource for weeding out things, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
all right. Do you have any plugs or hot things happening?
I just would like to continue to share my tour dates. You can get tickets at kelseycook.com. I'm coming to Washington, D.C. May 13th through the 15th. And then I am at the Comedy Club of Kansas City May 20th through the 22nd. So many other tour dates. Just head to kelseycook.com, or you can follow me on Kelsey Cook Comedy on Instagram. I love seeing Helpsters come out. So I think by the time this episode comes out, I will have just finished my weekend at Tacoma Comedy Club. So if you came out to that, thank you very much.
Awesome. And I just want to let you know, I email back and forth with helpsters all the time with our listeners. So if you're interested in connecting, you can head over to DelaneyFisher.com. And even though I'm not on social media, I still do have an email list. A lot of free resources on there. If you're curious, I've been getting messages from people who have been using the resume template that I have on there. And they are talking about the fact that they got more interviews immediately. And a lot of them are getting the jobs they really want. So that means so much to me. So feel free to check out all those things and we'll email back and forth to say hello. And my email list also gets first dibs on those two free calls I offer every week. So those are the people finding out when those types of opportunities are available, as well as, other exclusive kind of offers or programs I might be doing.
Nice.
Yes.
All right, guys. Hi, well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. You can go follow Lee at Mental Healness on TikTok, and we will talk to you next week.
All right.
Love ya. Bye.
Love you guys. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Self Helpless Podcast. You can find our Patreon community, merch, and our individual work at selfhelplesspodcast.com. We'd be thrilled if you shared this episode with a friend, or feel free to post it on Instagram.